to a radical application of Black aesthetic. Before we get started, I would like to say a few words, and some of you probably heard me say this for good enough time, and probably heard me butcher already. But the Toronto Comics Art Festival would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, the Haudenosaunee, and the Huron-Wendat, and that indigenous peoples have lived on and cared for this land for more than 15,000 years. This territory is covered by the Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Treaty. Today, Toronto is still the home to many indigenous people from across Turtle Island. We acknowledge that settlers on the land directly benefit from the process of colonization. In recognition of our gathering and on these lands of TCAP 2018, the festival has made a donation to Native Child and Family Services of Toronto. We look forward to increasing our support and programs for Indigenous creators in the years to come. And we would like to thank our sponsors. Programming at TCAP 2018 is sponsored by Seneca College's Faculty of Communication, Art, and Design. TCAP will also like to thank our presenting sponsors, the Beguiling, Little Island Comics, and the Toronto Public Library. Thanks to our media sponsor, Now Magazine. And we also recognize the support of Canada Council for the Arts, the Ontario Arts Council, the Toronto Arts Council. Thank you, and everyone enjoy.
That's dope.
That was cool, right?
Y'all already got one up on us.
Also, my recorder just died, so Jamie, thank you for recording this.
Oh, no, okay.
Let me get the mic.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. So this is the radical application of Black aesthetic. How many of y'all are people of color? Can I see a show of hands? Or self-identified? All right, how many of y'all are Black? Okay. So we're going to get into some shit, basically. Yeah. So I can read the explanation that you put in Lab Magazine.
Because I'm going to critique it. That's good, though. Read. Yeah. Oh, this.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, like, just do that. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Let's see. I just had the footnote.
Should I read it? Or?
Actually, yeah, that would be cool. Ooh. Starts at the bottom left.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's cool, right? All right. The nigger aesthetic is a representation of the Black body, Black life, and the corresponding way of seeing and thinking about the Black body, as informed by white supremacy's stigmatization of the Black body and Black life. Elements of the nigger aesthetic are the material qualities of the Black body and Black life, i.e. dark skin, nappy hair, singing, dancing, even pain and suffering, that have been stigmatized by white supremacy. The nigger aesthetic differs from the Black aesthetic in that the nigger aesthetic's function or the nigger aesthetic's function of stigmatization. Black aesthetic doesn't necessarily acknowledge the stigmatization of the Black body or Black life. The power of the nigger aesthetic is aptly summed up in the words of then-President Woodrow Wilson after a White House screening of Birth of a Nation, cinema's first great application of the nigger aesthetics. It is like writing history with lightning, and my only regret is that it is also terribly true. And you guys know Woodrow.
Yeah.
From Princeton to the White House.
So, oh, you already got a question?
Well, no, would you guys mind introducing yourself?
Oh, yeah. So, I do these all the time, and I always mess this part up.
I'm David Brothers.
So, this is Ron Wimberly, cartoonist. Raconteur, you said?
I'm just a cartoonist. Yeah. You know,
communicator.
Yeah.
I'm David Brothers. I do stuff like this. I talk to people about comic books and hopefully teach people stuff. So we're here to talk about basically like the way the Black body is cartooned or treated more generally in our pop culture, our natural culture, like cultural culture. One thing that struck me, what Ron was reading from was from Lab Magazine, which drops this weekend. You'll be at your table at TCAP?
Yeah. The Beehive table, my table. Yeah.
And what struck me is that the Black aesthetic is something that was created by Black people. You agree?
Well, yeah, I think... Yeah, okay, so I think the name, because blackness is kind of like a... in its own sort of way, politicizing and reclaiming like the stigmatization in a weird
and
the, certainly the codifying of it as well. Yeah, it's black people.
And the nigger aesthetic is a white creation.
Yeah.
That has been occasionally co-opted by black people. Mm-hmm. You called that a radical move. Mm-hmm. What makes it radical?
Wow. Okay. So it's funny because I just in Black History in Its Own Words, I talk. You know, I had that Angela Davis quote, which is actually like Angela Davis quoting Marx, which is radical is to grab something or is to grasp something at its root. And I think a way of kind of misappropriating, right, the nigger aesthetic, that's radical in the sense that it acknowledges the political function of the nigger aesthetic, mm-hmm. you know, and that's identifying what it's meant to do, you know, like in a social way, in a historical way, political, economic way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's radical.
Do you think one of those ways that it's executed has like primacy over the other? Was it like, we want to keep people down by depicting them this way, we want to make money by depicting them this way? What do you think the original thrust was?
Oh, well, that's a good question, because I feel like it's just a product of the what was happening like historically and economically, and its function, whether it was produced to do what it is or not is like, I don't know, that's another discussion. Yeah. But its function is definitely to brand the black body and the black life as being something subhuman or something, you know, it reifies that rift between black bodies and black life and the human being, I would say.
And one of the things, like when it's people like stereotype the black body, it's like, oh, big lips, big butts. It's all human features taken to like an inhuman, like scare quotes, level. So when you're reclaiming it, like how do you factor in that kind of thing? Like how do you make it so that if you draw somebody with big lips, like we've got this Joker image up here, like what makes this more interesting than like what Dartmouth was doing in the past? Mm.
Well, what I, and this is why I like I forget exactly I was referring to earlier what the title of the panel is. Mm. I'm not sure I believe in the act of reclamation. I think I'm using something that is pretty dangerous, right? In a sense to maybe make an awareness in in the audience or the reader of the political and historical subjectivity around the aesthetics. So to make the audience aware of, like, say, there's certain things that you may take for granted when you see a Sambo, right? Like, you may take for granted that, okay, well, this is meant to hurt me, right? And this is a bad image. So I think the way I want to use the image is to make people question or interrogate what and why, you know? So is dark skin bad? Like, are big lips bad? Mm-hmm. Or like, why are they bad? And why is this application of this making me feel bad? And like, what is the intent? Mm-hmm. Like, that's more my my purpose, or hopefully the function of my aesthetics, as opposed to like, okay, well, any sort of direct reclamation. I think I'm using it. I don't know if it can be reclaimed, but I'm hoping that it can be used to provoke an awareness or subjectivity about the aesthetics and maybe even more so, like, use those aesthetics to make an awareness about the function of maybe even white supremacy, more so than, like, you know, even the aesthetics, you know what I mean? Like, kind of like, look, you know, like, this is an image that's saying, look closely and carefully, and it's powerful. So, like
understand me.
Yeah. Well, understand what your place and your positionality in the world, and why this image is making you feel this way.
Yeah. You know? Can you talk a little bit about this image? Cotton Club? Because there's a lot in this. Mm. Let's start with the Cotton Club.
Yeah, so the Cotton Club was a club. Now, I think was it Jack Johnson who it was bought from Jack Johnson by like a white gangster. It was a club where slummers, like white jazz listeners, could go uptown to Harlem and listen to jazz and see black performers, but only the performers were allowed to attend as performers. The Cotton Club.
Yeah.
Jazz age.
And that's deep because we've got a very fraught history with cotton in
America. yeah. To say the least. Right? Yeah. We're probably both wearing cotton too.
Right.
Which is interesting. Yeah, like cotton was, you know, cotton. If you have a chance, see if you can pick up this book, Empire of Cotton. Like, cotton is, you know, it's what industrialized Europe, you know. And the network of industry built on war capitalism is what really pulled Europe with, you know, Britain especially, ahead of everyone else. And what's really interesting is... the network of labor and that story, the story of cotton, is really what unifies like the dehumanized chattel slave and the narrative, you know, that Marx and Engels was talking about, like the laborers in, you know, in Britain and in Germany. Like it kind of like pulls all that story together. But that's a completely different panel.
Yeah. Just as a sidebar, like on a related note, it trips me out that cotton and sugar were the two main things they had slaves working on. Like, I feel like God believes in irony.
Yeah.
But, so we've got the Joker, Mr. Joker. And it's a riff on, like, the DC Comics character.
Yeah.
But with specifically, like, Sambo features, which was something I had never thought about. Like, the big red lips, the, like, you know, slick back hair. What were you expressing here?
Well, just, like, aesthetically, I was thinking about Cab Calloway, and I was thinking about, the act of performing for a white audience and sort of there's an entire story I made for this, right? It's supposed to, right? And in the following page there's a description, and it essentially it's as if Ellison had. I was thinking about if Ellison wrote, like, did a bootleg of Batman, you know? And that's what the image is from. And I think about the Joker and thinking about the Joker as a performer, and thinking about Jazz Age performers and having to perform black identity. And in some, well, not, that's pre black identity, having to perform the nigger aesthetic and using that. to survive, you know, and thinking about how twisted it is, and also in this newspaper, I deal with the villain as well, and kind of like the notion of the relationship between the hero and the villain, and like for me, I've kind of always felt like the natural order, the order as it is now, is antagonistic to me. So ultimately, wouldn't the villain be my hero in any sort of, you know? Any hero that's going to maintain the structure as it is now is actually, like, you know, like, actually...
Basically the police.
Yeah. Like, I would believe in the villain. Like, the villain is bringing something that could be new.
Yeah. Or at least different. Also, the split spade flesh band.
Yeah.
Is there so many... like old-timey slurs for black people that like people just don't know about anymore.
Right.
But let's talk about performing blackness. You mentioned that a minute ago.
Yeah.
So this is a clip from Jay-Z's Story of OJ, where he played a character called J-Bo, while he's talking about like how if you're black in America, it doesn't matter what you have. Like, you'll be black forever. And I think that Jay-Z's performing a specific type of blackness, like black capitalist. Like, if you have money, here's what you spend it on. Here's, like, the smart way to be rich. How do you feel, like, in your work, you very often work with black themes. How do you feel about performing blackness for an audience that might not be in the same demographic or have the same kind of foundation?
I mean, that's why it's, like, really... it's fraught, right? And I'm always learning. I'm always dealing with it. You know what I mean? Like, even right now, you know? I'm thinking about how I can create work that...
Create work that provokes that question in the viewer, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, more so than anything. And, like, one of the things that's really... was really hard for me is when I created work and like and talking to an audience and realizing like, oh, okay, I just made a consumable for them, mm-hmm. you know, like something to kind of reify their own either identity performance or their infatuation with the commodity of, you know, blackness, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the thing that I get the most is like, you know, it's just like a black guy with a sword, like some sort of a phallic object in his hand. Is like one of the most popular images I could ever create, like always consistently.
Yeah.
You know, and so I started to think about like, well, what can I do with my aesthetics to break that connection that the audience has with the aesthetic? And I think that's what's great about a sambo for a black audience is there's going to be you're gonna look at that and you're not gonna identify with it.
Yeah.
It's like in a great way. Anytime you use, you know, and if you're, you know, my work is for a black audience. Like, anytime you work with those graphics, you're gonna create a disassociation effect because it's like, you know, while even the J-Bo character is, you know, he's like, he's Jay-Z. Ain't nobody want to look at the sambo and be like, oh yeah, that's like me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're going, oh. So then you're like, you're starting to. You're forced to kind of think about the political and historical context of what you're looking at. And you're starting to question that as opposed to being like, identifying, be like, oh yeah, I'm just like J-Bo. It's like,
well.
Wait, am I?
Huh. Yeah.
You know? You know what I mean?
And this is a long tradition of cartoons using this aesthetic. Mm. You know, I was born in 83, so I grew up on Bosco, who was, in hindsight, like a blackface dog, child, which is messed up, you know, a little bit. Mickey Mouse, yeah. Same thing, uses a lot of the same.
It's the language of minstrelsy. Yeah.
So how do you feel about that when it's expressed outside of an American context? Like Mr. Popo from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh man, I don't know if that got past the editing because I but I did do a whole thing and I want to do a whole newspaper on this on a whole bunch of stuff, like the phenomenon of those aesthetics and how they are moving back and forth. The aesthetic exists, right? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things, like even the Kewpie is an aesthetic that was appropriated from the West, you know, into anime, you know. And it's often also kind of has a fraught relationship. Just to like take a little sidebar, the Kewpie, people say it's like, oh, well, they're drawing these white, like that's somehow in an aspiration to white
innocence.
I didn't mean literally. Oh, yeah. I'm speaking from the voice of like the observer, the Western observer, like the Occidental view on like how the Kewpie is used. It's like, okay, they're drawing like white characters.
Oh,
like,
I see.
There are no Japanese people in anime, or there are no like black people in anime, or whatever. Which is like, the aesthetic draws from Kewpie, and I do think. Maybe the original intent, that infatuation is with something that is innocent and something that is cute. Mm-hmm. And also something that is a bit foreign, but not in the sense of, like a self-loathing or something, I think, for one's features, although there is a history of some things like this. And when I see Mr. Popo, I see an aesthetic that was appropriated to use like a fascination, you know, because like sambo was huge in Japan. Like they actually, I don't have all the dates and the info, but it was kind of bootlegged, the original story, which is a story about a South Asian child who is running from like a tiger, runs around a tree or jumps up in a tree, and the tiger runs around the tree until he turns into butter, which is like, you know. But like that was really big in Japan, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know, you'd have to ask Toriyama, but, like, I don't know where he got it from, but I'm sure that he was of the age at the right time to experience these graphics. Mm-hmm. And just the same way that he appropriates a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Orientalism in Toriyama's work. Mm-hmm. And when I say Orientalism, I mean, like, the Western lens on the on Asia. Mm-hmm. In Dragon Ball, there's a lot of that. Like, if you look at all of those characters, all of the heavenly characters, they are sort of a shorthand of South Asian, you know, like, they have a South Asian look, right? Mm-hmm. And Mr. Popo is like, that is an appropriated graphic. Now, is it indicative of some inherent anti-blackness in the story or in the character or in Toriyama? I'd say, you know, that's not my... I don't know Toriyama. But I'd say, no, but do the... This is what subjectivity is. Mm-hmm. That image, even though it's appropriated and taken outside of its context, for us subjectively, it's still harmful, right? It can be harmful. Unless you have a subjective way of seeing the art, in which case you're like, oh, okay, no, this... Actually, he's not... He's just dark.
Yeah.
His darkness, even though he is a servant, right? His darkness for... In this subjective context is not sort of ridiculed, you know? And his lips are not ridiculed. Like, they're, you know, people have big lips. People have red lips. People have brown lips. People have all types of lips, right? And I don't think that's what he was trying to do. That's kind of like my take on it. However, it does not divorce the aesthetic language from its kind of original function, right? And I'm not going to say intent, but its function.
Yeah. And we've been saying aesthetic a lot. Would you describe it as a toolkit, almost, or like a constellation of things?
I think in lab, I quoted Adorno and his definition of aesthetics. But I would say, like, it's a regime of making and expressing, you know, a toolkit for sure, right? But also that toolkit extends to the experience of the tools applied, right? Yeah. Like the application of the tools. So, like, when we say aesthetics, we're talking about that
cause plus effect.
Yeah.
Okay. How old are you?
I'm 39. I turned 39 on the 28th of April.
So was there a lot of this kind of imagery around when you were a kid?
Oh, hell yeah, man. Yeah. Like, a lot of those old cartoons were still on, you know? Like, I definitely got to see, I forget the name of her now, but the Mammy from Tom and Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, literally never see her. I mean, you might have seen her face once. I think that stuff was always around. And, like, there are always little artifacts, little dolls and things you'll see somewhere, you know? Yeah.
Or on somebody's lawn.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, in D.C. was a strange place because black life was ubiquitous in a way that, like, that sort of thing would never occur to be, like, negative to me. Mm-hmm. You know, but once you move out of that space and you have, like, a sort of different perspective on it and you see how other people react to it,
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, the Mammy... Like, I love Tom and Jerry. It's one of my favorite cartoons.
Aunt Jemima.
Yeah, exactly. She went from black to white. Like, they recolored her for the...
they changed her voice, too.
Yeah. And kind of... I don't say sanitizing is not the right word, but, like, making it appropriate for 80s babies instead of, you know, like, people born in the 20s when that was just cool. What do you think about things like that, where it's almost stitching it out of history?
I hate that shit, man.
Yeah.
I'm like, just show it. You know what I mean? If you want to show it, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, you've already decided that its function as a product is more important to you than, like, you know. So you still want to cake up off of it. You still want to get paid for it, right? You still want to, you know, use it. But, like, and in a weird sort of way, you want to do that while at the same time not admitting that the original function of it, or like its space, like its relativity to the world that it came from, and you know what it means is when you see that, and you see that it's just the material world of that time, the end of our time, to be honest, created that imagery. So like by taking it out, you're in a weird sort of way denying that the historical reality.
It's sort of like cultural money laundering.
Yeah, for sure. It is. Yeah, that's a great
Yeah, you got a question?
I just a question on that. So sometimes I know the old Warner Brothers things, they put up like a disclaimer being like, we didn't change this because this is the way it actually was, and then they show it. And I was wondering, like, where does that sit in like the constellation of like cultural money laundering?
I don't know. It's like, it's a weird, the wording, I don't have the wording in front of me, but the wording is all, you know, it tends to slip into that, they were men of their time type
reflects
of thing.
The values of
the time. It's like, yes, it, I mean, which is not an untrue statement. It could also, you know, you could also append to that, it reflects the values of our time. You know what I mean? That's kind of like what goes unsaid, right? That's kind of how I feel about it. I think it's like, you gotta say something, you know, or you could just show it and keep it 100, you know what I mean? And like have, you know what I mean? And then like have, you know, it's very dangerous, just put it out there, you know? But I do think if they are trying to promote a sort of subjectivity around the work, go ahead and talk about it, you know what I mean? Go ahead and talk about it, but it would...
It's hard to tell if that's earnest or just like a lawyer in a room who's like, we have to put this on here or else people will sue.
Whether or not it's earnest is like, it is hard to tell. Yeah. But it's also irrelevant to me because like you can just look at what the programming is, the contemporary programming is, and kind of like think, see about how earnest it is.
Yeah. And so we talked about Mammy and Aunt Jemima. How is the black woman cartoon differently from the black man? In this, in the nigger aesthetic and the black aesthetic, really.
Yeah, man, like... man, how to unpack that? It's weird because I mentioned Bimbo, too, right? And which was also sort of like a indigenous or like South Pacific, South Asian cartoon, which I think... it's funny because like that word, which... I use to refer to the aesthetic essentialization of like a woman's body, right? Started with a brown body, right? I think with the Mammy, it's crazy because like, and I'm just going off the top of my head, what makes it so difficult or so. There's so much to wrap your head around because it's like the Mammy is like desexualized, but the body is still sort of like it's hyper physical, like the body, like she's, you know, she's still sort of like a walking a wet nurse, womb, like cook, you know, and in a weird sort of way, like seeing how that. Seeing how the aesthetics turn her into something different than what the aesthetics would do, say, to like a white, you know, woman body character, you know? I don't know, like, man, what was your question? 'Cause like, you know, I feel like a lot of it is me asking those questions in the work. Like, I'm asking myself those questions. So, like, even in lab, it's like, I'm not, I posit some, answers, but a lot of it is me working through that. So like even with the Joker image, it's me kind of like asking those questions and interrogating like what, you know, the function is of these aesthetics, while at the same time hopefully producing something that triggers that same phenomena in the audience, like the creation of a critical framework that we can use to interrogate what these aesthetics are doing. You know what I mean? Which is like important to me and my work. And I'm hoping that it can kind of, it's like a viral thing that then when you go and you look at something else, you have a critical framework to kind of understand or like kind of like, not understand, but like interrogate aesthetics in general.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just like consuming the aesthetic. And in a way, I'm very wary of just like consuming an aesthetic, and, you know, like, identifying with it and being like, oh, that's my story, and, you know, like, I've been represented. And it's like, I feel when that happens, sometimes you're, you know, I think susceptible to just swallowing the pill of whatever it is you're looking at.
So you accept the parts that make you you, but alongside that are the parts where it's that were added to it than like the poisonous side.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily deliberate. You know, it could just be a matter of the material reality or the political reality that produces those aesthetics. So just reproducing, you know, the aesthetics reproducing kind of the material or political reality, you know, that produces the aesthetics.
Yeah. So the story of OJ thing, one thing I didn't know until I read your essay was that it was mostly a team of white animators who were, I assume, working under the guidance of a black creative director. Mm. I like to think so anyway.
Right.
How do you feel about that kind of thing where it's subverting the aesthetic to an extent, but it's from someone who doesn't have the experience of being harmed by the aesthetic?
Mm.
Like, there's a lot of white cartoonists who do blaxploitation comics that just feel like shitty blaxploitation parodies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what the reason why I wanted to make the newspaper is to kind of, you know, I don't know if how much we've been really even asked to think about those things. You know, like, so if you know, maybe you just see a comic, you just see those aesthetics, it just makes you feel good, or it's like, you know, it's it turns you on in a way, but like you never really question like why, or you know, like what the aesthetics are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Working in that sort of pastiche, like that blaxploitation pastiche, it's like if you're just reproducing the pastiche, whereas in some cases the original producers of those films or aesthetics have a political awareness of what they're trying to do with those aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in those cases, they're more often to be, like, subversive. But, like, if you're really just into sort of the appearance of them and you're not really interrogating, like, politically what they're trying to do or doing, mm-hmm. you know, then you're maybe going to just reproduce, like, certain elements of, you know, the environment that you're in
mm-hmm.
with the surface of those things. You know what I mean? Like, so a preoccupation with, like, black masculinity or, like, the libidinal aspects of,
yeah.
like, you know, the characters in a blaxploitation. Because, like, that's what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even in the blaxploitation, that's what it is. And I think sometimes it happens in blaxploitation where it's, like, just the people trying to... They're making a film... white audiences like to see that too,
mm-hmm.
And they're just reproducing like sort of the white gaze in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, there was a comic last year Howard Chaykin did, Divided States of Hysteria, that had a lynching cover.
Mm-hmm.
It was not pro-lynching,
mm-hmm.
but it turns out if you do something that's too close to the real thing, it just looks like the real thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was almost just like a hate crime for no reason.
Yeah, my whole thing is like,
I shouldn't say for no reason.
Right.
There's no reason for hate.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't really care what Chaykin's intent is, right?
Yeah.
Like, first of all, if you're gonna show that, like, what's your reason?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, you can answer that question, right? Even if you're selling a product that is using that. Mm-hmm. Then there's like a commercial aspect to it. The commercial, you are selling the spectacle of the destruction of a body, right?
Yeah.
Your intent.
if you step on somebody's toe, their toe is still stepped on.
Right, the toe is still stepped on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah. Josh was mad because I actually didn't talk that much about it.
Yeah.
Let me just read the paragraph, please. Like,
here you go.
Yeah. I was going to write a whole thing on Ralph Bakshi's 1975 film Coonskin, but ran out of space, and I'm not sure the work deserves my effort. Despite some great performances by Philip Michael Thomas, Barry White, Charles Gordon, and Scatman Carruthers, as well as Bakshi's gorgeous designs, you cannot take that away from him. Coonskin also fails to achieve escape velocity from the original function of nigger aesthetics. Though the performances begin to subvert the flattening of the function of the nigger aesthetics, speaking to the performances of the, you know, the performers. Right? The story ultimately breaks down into a hollow spectacle for the white gaze of its director.
And you can kind of see that here, where I feel like this image is simultaneously beautiful and terrible. like it, from a pure arts perspective, the contrast, like the way the black faces just kind of sit on the other colors. Mm-hmm. Even, I don't know if that's a painted sky or a photo. That's got to be a photo, actually.
Yeah, he used a lot of photography.
Like there's something aesthetically pleasing about it, but then when you look a little closer, it's like, oh, all the black dudes are basically roaches. Mm-hmm. And like that's not that cool anymore.
Mm-hmm. And it's something reductive. It's like, I feel like, well, if you do kind of play with that, This is why I made the newspaper, is to kind of like get people to interrogate like the ideology of the form itself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the ideology of the form of a sambo is like, you know, it's to stigmatize like the black body. Mm-hmm. So then like, what are you doing with the aesthetics to kind of counter that? You know what I mean? Like, I could say that maybe he's trying to. Like, what about the form of what you're doing is doing that, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, combining these two elements. Like, in J-Bo, like, the J-Bo character, I don't feel like it's not actually saying any, and to forget about the stripper that's in it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a stripper in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, it's just so much to unpack. You see how difficult it was just to like put all that in like 3,000 words? Like, you don't understand how much I had to cut down because like there's so much to deal with. Anyway, like I don't see how the J-Bo character I don't see how it's any sort of an aesthetic critique or an aesthetic even illumination or sort of like a juxtaposition for you to think about the reduction of. And the lyrics, it's brilliant because the lyrics are doing the exact same shit. Because it's taking like, you know, nigga as a word. Mm-hmm. This is how we use it. This is the function of it. And like, it's so nuanced. It's not just ER or A or whatever the hell it is. It's like in the course of a record, you can hear nigga used in a way that is like subversive, mm-hmm. and also like reproducing. You know what I mean? Like, okay, well that guy, like the way he said that word,
yeah,
he dehumanized. You know, like he's talking about it. It's like, yo, that's my nigga. It's like, fuck that nigga. Like, you're doing, like, it's a very, and I think that is radical in itself because, like, it's taking away the reduction of what the word refers to. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's what I think is something you can apply nigga aesthetics. Like, if you show how, like, complex the character is, yeah. I think it could be something, too, where it makes you start to think about, like, well, the form is reductive. But what? Why? You know? But it's actually not. You know, like, you know. I think there's something that. But it is it's a laboratory, man. It's a lab for you to kind of like work out all of that. I don't know.
And this
does that make any sense? Like,
I mean, I think
going on and on and on.
You're basically saying like instead of critiquing it or recycling in like a true sense, like taking it in and putting it back out, it's just sort of like this is mine now. Like, I'm going to use this aesthetic, and by using it, it means something different than it did before. Mm.
Is that what I mean? I don't know if that's what I mean.
I think that's what Jay-Z's doing.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
You got a question?
Yeah, you know, you guys are talking about things that have been removed and how it pisses you off if they just take them out. Mm-hmm. You talked about they'll show cartoons, they'll put, like, a disclaimer on it. Mm. It got me thinking about how Disney just pulled Song of the South. You know, I'll never get to watch that again. But they left Dumbo. Mm. Right? Full of crows.
Yeah.
Why are the crows okay? But like Song of the South gets yanked. You know, like what
Song
about
of the
it?
South is low key terrible anyway. But in Dumbo, I was actually gonna bring up the crows. I'm glad you said that. Because as a kid I didn't know they were stereotypes.
They're magpies.
They were magpies?
They have yellow beaks, right?
Is that the difference? I'm like, crows have yellow beaks, ravens have black beaks. I don't know anything about birds. But as a kid, they were cool because they acted like cool people. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that they were stereotypes of black people.
Yeah. Did Carruthers do one of those too? Like, I feel like that's that voice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if they don't read hard enough, like, if they don't read instantly and, like, hard enough.
Yeah, they could get away with it, basically.
And
they
could just be like, oh, what is it?
I think about it like this, right? If you have a, you find out that there's like you own like a grocery store, right? And someone says like your provider hits you up, you know, you have a whole bunch of, let's say, corn, just for the
irony.
You're like, okay, I shipped you a batch of corn. It's a bad batch. You can tell. I mean, it's all bad. It's a bad batch, but you can kind of tell some of them because, like, if you open it up, you can see where the boll weevil got into it, right? Mm-hmm. And then what you do is you go and you look at the corn and you see where you can tell if it's happened or not. You take those off, but you leave the other ones on it, right? That's kind of what I think. I think that's all it is. You have a product that is noticeably offensive right now, so you take it off the shelf. You leave the rest of the stuff on. And I'm not going to go into, like, maybe what's wrong with a lot of Disney films.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for me, you know what I mean? Like, for me, and, like, subjectively, just kind of how I see, like, what I see wrong with them, I'm actually less interested in, you know, being like, oh, that's bad, or that's bad, or this bad, or that's bad, and more interested in, like, creating or sort of, like, cultivating a tendency for audiences to have a critical framework to look at all of the works, you know what I mean? To look at everything in a way and be like, okay, well, I'm really enjoying this. Like, I'm super into this, you know, this, but this is certainly the a fantastic spectacle of the assassination of the black radical imagination by, like, the black neoliberal imagination.
Is that Black Panther?
Say that. That was just an example.
Yes.
That someone could use.
You got a question.
I was wondering, like, because you talked about form, so in your choosing a newspaper, so I'm going to guess that you're inspired by Black Panther, not the Marvel superhero. But the
yeah,
Black Panther.
Oh man, like, I mean.
And how they, like, because, like, they started off as, like, just a flyer, mm-hmm. and that grew into, like, such a big mm-hmm. newspaper.
So and art was such a big part of that, too. Kind of
yeah, you know what's crazy is, like, you know, Emery Douglas and all that, like, that's such a big part of, like, what my diet is. I never even thought of that, but certainly, you know, but this gets into what I was saying about you kind of reproduce things, right? Like, so that is part of, like, my, that is my political subconscious, right? So, and I'm reproducing the form, you know, of what kind of, like, you know, unintentionally.
Yeah.
But, like, certainly. Yeah. Jeez, wow.
Right? Who else has questions? Anybody curious? In the back.
Yeah. I'll stand up so people can see.
Hey.
So I'm sure you've probably heard a lot of, like, the kerfuffle about the Gambino video.
Yeah. He asked me if I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So not to be a dead horse, how there's, like, division. Is this for the white gays or is this for a black audience? Like, what was, like, your feeling, like, because at the same time, like, I got, like, a feeling of reproduction, whereas other people may have got that, oh, he's being subversive. Mm. And, like, some people felt radical. To me, I didn't feel like it was all that radical because I've seen those images. So it's kind of like a weird, interesting balance of what's what being presented to us. Like,
so
your thoughts on that.
Childish Gambino's This Is America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Man, like, I'm just like, you wake up, and it's like you got a whole bunch of messages. Like, everybody in the queue think they're showing it to you, right? It's like, okay, right? Everybody's asking your opinion or whatnot. And, like, when I first saw it, I was like, wow, this is, you know, this is something to unpack. Like, I don't, you know, I'm so past, like, I'm so tired of, like, just going for people, and I don't want to, you know, put out, like, you know what I mean? I don't want to put, like, my hot take. It's like, I let it cool down. You know, I'm trying to burn my tongue. So I hold it. Then it's like, I'm just like, well, I do think, first of all, the video is definitely made. Yeah, it's amazing. I, in an academic way, I can see, like, wow, okay, I see what you're doing. You know, I see, you know, like, the staging of it in a warehouse. Like, this is very, you know, very Brechtian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah. At the same time, though, yeah, so to interrogate what its function is, I think all you have to do is look at Twitter, you know. I think in a weird sort of way, it is working because it's creating a political dialogue around the aesthetics, which I think, if it's done that, I think that's great. You know what I mean? And to have people arguing about it and maybe even arguing about the function of the aesthetics is, like, dope. I'm into that, you know? I just didn't really like the song that much. But, like, you know, artists gotta make, they're going to make stuff. And, like, that's our job, just to keep making things, you know? And I'll give him the credit of you know, just trying, you know? Like, man, it's just good to see somebody try, man, and make a mistake. Like, maybe you reproduce something, right? But you're trying to say something, like, you're already, like, a step ahead, I feel like, you know? As opposed to just accidentally reproducing it because, like, you want to show, like, you know, fly gear and, like, you know, the burner and, like, you know, all that, you know?
Yeah. Real 1992 shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Your question about the white gaze is really interesting because, like, I'm American, so I tend to think, I always think from an American perspective. Like, I think a lot of art in America almost has to be for the white gaze in some way, at least to a certain extent, just because of that's how capitalism works. Economic. That's who you're going to be selling to. Dave Chappelle learned that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes it creeps up on you when you don't realize you're doing it. Have you ever had one of those moments where you're like, oh, like the wrong people are laughing at this for the wrong reasons?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is like, but it happens with other things too, you know? Like it happens on some male gaze thing, you know what I mean? Which it forces me to kind of like interrogate what I'm reproducing in my work, you know? Yeah, all the time. Like, I mean, that's why this is such an important thing for me because I think it's almost like it's a fool's errand to expect to be understood by creating work, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm a fool, you know? And at the same time, it's like, I think that's why, like, maybe where I'm at now is trying to foster a broader tradition of looking at things carefully so that, because like, yeah, man, and I'm, you know, it's conceited, but I just, you know, I get so many cats coming up to the table talking to me about things and I'm just like, it makes me, you know, it's mortifying to me, man, like, it's my ego is hurt to hear that what my work does or how it's perceived, you know, sometimes it's like, oh man, like that's the exact opposite of what I was trying to do, you know. But you really don't, I mean, you don't own the experience of your work, you know, you don't.
We've talked about it from a craft perspective or like a person who draws perspective, but like it's just a straight up black man. How is this kind of research into the radical application of aesthetics, like, how has that changed for you?
It's crazy because it's interesting because just researching gives me like a bit of a new perspective on the relationship of like the black intellectual and black radical theory and its relationship to sort of like white academia. So like looking up Moton and Cedric Brooks and, like, you know, Adorno and, like, you know, like, kind of following back and seeing how someone borrows from something else. And, like, it's funny, like, I was writing some drafts and I would send them to my homegirl who, you know, she's going out for her doctorate or whatever. She's, like, the smart. She puts me on all of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she's reading it, and she's like, oh, you should cite, instead of citing, you know, whatever white guy, she's like, you should cite Moton here. And it's funny, she's like, well, I was reading Moton, and he's who put me onto that guy. You know what I mean? And it's like, and it's interesting to think about, you know, like, I've always been, not always, but like, I'm really into, you know, David Harvey, and like, so I'm, you know, checking out David, and then there's like seeing how some of the white intellectuals deal with it, and always kind of looking for the space where, you know, like, you know, jumping back to Wilderson to kind of get this perspective, and also doing the same thing and like adding this component, and like, you know,
seems like a never-ending journey.
I think it is, yeah. You know. I'm just glad to be done for a little while with the newspaper so that I can kind of start
looking how I can like apply some of the way I've been thinking, or even ask the questions through my formal practice. Not that I didn't do that with lab, but
cartooning is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The like the vast breadth of Black thought on the subject is interesting to me, because like I just really learned about Brazil and slavery and like how it was expressed there, how white supremacy is expressed, and like the Black experience is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
And so things that like hurt me here might like heal me over here, or vice versa. So I love reading about stuff like this, because I feel like I have a pretty like I have a pretty good handle on being Black. Mm. Black thought theory, that kind of thing out, you know.
Yeah.
I've been at this for 34 years, but there's always something more to learn, because no matter how down you think you are, no matter how much you think you have, like every one of us is unique.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel like we're pretty simpatico, but like you're on a bunch of stuff that I'm not on yet, or you know that I learned about. So yeah, y'all should pick up Lab tomorrow. Any more
it's
questions?
Got some funny comics in it too.
Yeah.
I mean,
is this the first time the African comic was printed?
Yo, no, it was printed in Meat House, but like okay. This is a remix. I've changed some things. I've reduced colors, and also I did some like some places of the script I just did like an automatic, like I you know there was a point where I was like you know, and it is representative of. You know, somewhere mostly representative of where I was when I was like in my maybe like mid to late 20s. And, you know, with a little bit, the parts that I've changed are like, you know, it's my voice now, or like, you know. But yeah, this is the first time it's printed properly, because when it was printed in Meat House, it was kind of like cut off a little bit. Like, I guess, I don't know, they resized it to page or something. This is like, I think, the first time
definitive. It's printed. Yeah. You got a question?
Yeah, like, it's a complicated question in a way. I guess, like, I've been thinking about, well, okay, I guess recently I've been slapped in the face by being Black and creating at the same time, and realizing, like, okay, well, you know, I love what everyone else is doing, and they're doing really great work, and I don't want them to stop. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, I have to make a space for me. And hopefully if there are other people who are, like, into that, then, like, yeah, that's great. Because I was just like, okay, well, there has to be other Black people who are, like, also into monsters, right? And that's a whole complicated thing that I won't get into. But I was thinking about, like, okay, in my particular context, I have recently started drawing more, like, women who are also, like, vampires and, like, dragons and all that sort of nonsense at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just sort of like, do you sometimes feel like depicting, I guess, Blackness onto things that, like, maybe might be fraught with, like, tension is, like, a thing that you struggle with, or, like, a thing that you think about a lot, or...
Do you mean, like, Blackness as an analog, like, something as an analog for
no,
Blackness?
Like,
no,
I mean, like, this woman I drew is Black, and she's also a dragon. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see the problem. Like, yeah, I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah, no, I think, because, like, I've been working on for a long time, like, something that's dealing with, you know, this sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because, so for instance, maybe, you know, I don't really, you know, here's the thing, I don't really care about giving away ideas or anything like that, but one of the things that I'm dealing with is Blackness and, say, you know, all of the different types of romantic horror characters, right, and their relationship to human beings, right?
Right.
So if you mention a dragon, right, and you mention Black, well, here's the thing about Black characters and monsters is that, A Black body is post-human already,
right.
You know, like it exists somewhere outside or adjacent to what it is to be human, right? And also, when you're talking about these monsters, like the Black body has already had this relationship with being consumed, you
right.
know, so or you know or or having its reproduction sort of like either stigmatized or you know taken away the right of it taken away already, you know.
Right.
So I think. Nah, do that shit. Like, there's so much to do, right? There's so much to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Until you asked that question, I didn't know that I can't think of any black vampires outside of like the Eddie Murphy movie. Mm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's also the sweet
Blade.
No.
Oh, Blade is half vampire.
Wait, what's this? What's the one from the
Settler?
No, what's the one from my no? Ganja and Hess, which was like a guy. Yeah. Thank you. Huh? The Fledgling. Oh yeah.
There's a. I guess I got to pay more attention.
It's a shit movie. But
she's kind of like, I guess, exploring blackness in terms also in like, I guess like you know, things like vampires and things like that. A thing that I do in my creative work is kind of like. Because, like, vampires, you know, and goblins and whatnot, they come from a source.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, like, understanding that source within this culture, and I do that a lot, like, not only as, like...
Excuse me. What do you mean by a source? I don't know if I understand.
From, like, for example, like, if you read, like the vampire hype, where did that come from? A fear of immigration, things mm-hmm. like that. And what does it mean to take those sources and put it in a context that is...
I'm on that wave. We're on the same wave. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay. That like kind of like subverts it and makes it your own narrative. And I do that a lot within like a lot of my creative works, especially being like African American and Haitian, and like our ties to zombies and vampires as well. And how there's definitely
like
a space.
like
we'll talk afterwards.
Yeah. I think you're gonna like it.
But that's a great example of how, like. I mentioned the breadth of the experience. Like, there are so many different angles you have to take into account when making things. I was going to say as a person of color, but really, like, everyone should do it. Because, like, dragons represent, like, greed, for example. So what is, like, a black dragon, what is his blackness, what does that character's blackness have to do with the origins of the dragon? And sometimes people get it wrong, where you're like, oh, like, is that what this is about the whole time? But when it's right, like, it's refreshing.
Yeah. Right, there's a fetishization of the surface too in a lot of cases. Like, I know a lot of my first stories, or a lot of, you know, I have a compulsion to create, like, yo, a dragon just looks cool. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to draw it. You know what I mean? Like, it's got dope scales and stuff. Like, I just want to draw it. Like, I don't have, it's like, I don't have that as much anymore. I wish, like, I'm trying to find it sometimes. But, like, but it's, you know, you have that aspect, and then you have the aspect, okay, like, well, you know, what does this mean? And so, I got it. So, if you, like, go, for instance, I like the medieval artwork, because we're talking about Western dragons, right? Like, okay, I like this medieval representation of it. And I'm looking at the figures, and I'm looking at everything in that. Now I'm thinking about, like, well, the church's relationship to the depiction of the body, and, like, the church's relationship to the perception of the body, and how that gets, like, how that produces these medieval, you know, images. And, like, then what is the relationship of the dragon to the church? You know what I mean? Like, so, and then I think it's, you know... It gives you a lot more to kind of chew on and, like, to create things. And then you let it go, and, like, somebody just looks at it and says, I like this dragon. Right?
Yeah.
So we're out of time. Can I get a round of applause for this guy?